it's not that I'm saying that there won't be populist gains, but the picture is by no means as clear as these assumptions suggest. There are several factors which could well transform the situation, including by no means a botched Brexit. And it's already clear that populists in the European Union are changing their tune on their fundamental attitudes towards membership because of the dreadful mess that the British have made of the process of getting out. And I have every confidence, I'm afraid to say, that we have worse to come. So, all sorts of things could intervene. President Trump could also play a part. I wouldn't for a moment, therefore, take it for granted that the populists, whoever they are, will make a huge gain. This leads to the second point. The populists come in various shapes and sizes and by no means sing the same tunes. Who are the populists? Is Mr. Tsipras, who is president, who is prime minister of the Greek government, and who came from a very radical left-wing background, is he a populist or is he not? He's now telling the Italians that it's probably better for them to cooperate with the European Union. Similarly, inside Italy, we have two quote-unquote populist parties in government, but anybody who's watched them both historically and indeed since they took over government is well aware that they don't exactly agree on what they want to achieve. I think it's quite clear also that some of them are distancing themselves from cooperation with Madame Le Pen, who herself has difficulties with other members of the so-called populist fraternity. So I think one has to define one's terms. I suspect what underlies the assumptions is a feeling that we are in a period of considerable political uncertainty, that people's feelings about both domestic and international politics are very volatile at present, and therefore that the outcomes of any election, whether national or European, are unpredictable. But to suggest that it'll all go one way is, I think, misleading.
I'm always struck by how, for example, Juncker, the president of the European Commission, appears to almost take pride in ignoring these howls of anguish. They are difficult to interpret, but shouldn't the European Union try a bit harder to understand?
Well, of course they should. And I don't incidentally think that Juncker's views are of considerable importance, but there we are. He is the leader of the European Commission, which is within the European Council, where all the important decisions are taken.
And for many people, although his opinion might not matter, they think it matters.
Yeah, I mean, his views are worth listening to. I don't think he does ignore the populists. I don't think Donald Tusk, who's a rather more significant and heavyweight figure, does either. Everybody is aware of this, the threat of uncertainty. I would prefer to put it that way. The populist challenge, if you want to put it that way. But I don't think they ignore these threats. It's just that the message coming from the populists, if in general, is so varied and so unsynchronized, uncoordinated, that it's difficult to define a strategy, a single strategy, to cope with their protests. I think that if you look at the speeches of Tusk or Merkel or Juncker himself or any other mainstream Macron, any other mainstream European member state politician, you will see that they are very much concerned with what the grassroots are saying. They're bound to be, because in the last resort, at member state level, as well as at EU level, their jobs will stand or fall by their reactions.
Now, as someone who knows the European Union extremely well, what would you judge to be the biggest challenge of the challenges we know about so far this year for the European Union?
Well, this is a very difficult year by definition, because the calendar, and this isn't, there's nothing sinister about this, the calendar provides for elections in May and for a change of guard at the top of all the EU institutions of any importance, the European Council, the ECB, the European Commission, the European Parliament. These are difficult challenges in and of themselves. If the political background is very volatile, as I've suggested, then they become all the more challenging. In addition to that, you have a very important ongoing process, which again is scheduled, predictable, but nevertheless exceedingly challenging, of defining the EU's financial framework for the next 7 years. So pre-planned or pre-scheduled challenges built into the program for this year. Unexpected things, events, if you like, can nevertheless make life even more complicated. One area to watch is clearly what does happen in the Brexit negotiations. The primary victim of any further bungling will be the UK itself, but the fallout will be of significance within the European Union in general, and particularly in the states which have most to do with the UK in trade and other ways. Similarly, one cannot ignore the fact that the United States is currently led by a president whose actions are, to put it mildly, unpredictable and by no means always constructive. So the challenges can come from many, many places: Syria, Russia, social unrest, populism, of which you've already spoken, etc., etc. I wouldn't like to provide a list of in priority order of likely or most important challenges. They're all important, and it's going to be a very difficult year.
Just two more questions, if I may. Brexit, however it might happen, if it does happen, and it probably will, how will that affect the European Union financially? But also, some people suggest the European Union will become less business friendly.
I don't think this latter point is proven indeed. There's still a very active free trade, if you want to put it that way, business-oriented set of governments: Nordic, Benelux, the Germans too, really, and as long as Macron remains in power in France, Macron too. And I think one of the lessons one can derive from the Brexit story is that although in the case of Britain, business left it very late, governments find it increasingly difficult to pursue a course which business doesn't like, because the markets have it out on them. I think Mr. Tsipras would have views on that too. I'm not at all sure that the environment will become, as a result of Brexit, significantly less business friendly. Will Brexit cost? Yes, of course it will. It'll cost in terms of lost trade with the UK, who's an important partner of the European Union, both ways. I mean, exports and imports. It will cost in budgetary terms. The UK has been a net contributor to the EU budget. That gap will have to be filled. There will be also, I think, non-financial, non-economic costs. The UK, despite all the troubles that there have been between the it and its EU partners, has been an important and in many ways very constructive member of the European Union. British civil servants, or civil servants of British origin within the EU institutions, have played a very important and constructive role in the development of the European Union in the last few decades. They will be missed. There's also a large element of there's a large loss possible, I think, in the outlook of the Union towards the outside world. The British, for all their parochialism over Europe, do have a sense of global realities, play a role in the United Nations, etc., which have influenced the outlooks of their the outlook of their partners within the European Union. So there are losses to be faced in many areas and in many respects. I think, however, that the principal loser from Brexit will be the UK itself, which means almost certainly that 29th of March this year will not be the end of the story.
And final question. There is increasing what is termed authoritarianism in some European Union countries. Poland and Hungary have come close to apparently flouting European Union values or rules. Has that battle been won? Are we going to see more of that this year?
Well, it hasn't been won, but I think it is being won. I find Hungary particularly problematic, but it seems that the high years of the Kaczynski people in Poland are probably behind them. I think we shall have problems of this kind in various countries, not frequently, but continuously for years to come. Partly because of the nature of the world. I mean, American politics is scarcely stable and the politics of other countries are scarcely stable. We live in a very difficult global environment and people, the public responds, therefore, to the external challenges in ways which may not always be comfortable for those who are in power. There will also be, I think, there is also, in the case of Central and Eastern Europe, a process of accommodation to a totally new world, post-communist world, which was never going to be easy and which will have to be continue to be worked through and worked at for years to come. So, yes, we will have discomforts, we will have challenges, we will doubtless try to proclaim victory, but I'm not sure that victory will be won in the near future at all. But that's life.
I did say final question. I've just thought I can't do an interview and not mention what developments might there be in two huge areas, the euro and migration.
Well, as far as the euro is concerned, the important story of the last 10 years has been the way in which as public opinion poll after public opinion poll confirms, despite everything, most people like the euro. And all governments are, within the European Union, leaving out Britain for different reasons, those who are not yet members, have not only come to terms with the single currency, but recognise that their interests are vitally tied up in it. And so I think it will survive, which doesn't mean to say that in this area, as in every other area, there may not be troubles to come. There almost certainly will be as we move into what will quite likely be a period of recession. But I don't think that anybody should take out money betting on the collapse of the euro.
And migration?
That, too, is a crisis, a challenge which will go on for decades. And you can see this simply in demography. If you look at demographic patterns, to take the two obvious cases, Europe and Africa, there will be demographic pressures pushing people towards the European, people from Africa towards the European Union, people also from elsewhere. We shall have to, the Europeans, will have to develop our policies with that reality in mind. There's no easy solution. But I think, again, the important point to say is this, that if you contrast the position now with 2015, the European Union has made huge advances in terms of controlling its external frontiers. The numbers have dropped quite dramatically, 95% since October 2015. And this is numbers of those entering irregularly or illegally. Although there are many problems of internal adjustment which lie ahead and will take years to resolve, although equally for demographic reasons, the challenge, or rather the pressure will be maintained, I don't think there's any ground for undue pessimism.